I'm not pulling out of my driveway. We all know what that means. It's time for another Drive to Work Coronavirus Edition. So I've been doing lots of fun interviews, and today I got a blast from the past. So I want to welcome Brian Tinsman.
Hi, Mark. Hi, everyone in Mark's podcast land.
Okay, so Brian worked on Magic for quite a while. So we're going to go back. Let's go back to the very beginning, which I've been asking everybody, which is, how did you get into Magic?
I was on a date with my soon-to-be wife, and we went to a game store, and a clerk at the game store showed us, and I had kind of been avoiding it because I had friends who played, and I knew that I'd probably get sucked in and didn't really want to spend the money. But I was with my girl and wanted to show off, so I pulled out the wallet.
Ah, okay.
I don't know if it earned me any points or not, but we had fun playing. And eventually she became brand manager of Magic anyway, so I guess it worked out.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about you and working at Wizards, because you have an interesting path to get to R&D. You do not have a traditional path. So how did you start working at Wizards?
All right. I was in business school getting an MBA, and I kind of have a mind that's always churning on something, and it had been churning on Magic cards for more than a year, and I had in mind, I was at the University of Washington, and I had in mind, oh my God, Wizards is in the area. I must target them. I must find some inroads there, and ended up getting into marketing research there. And this was around the time when they had acquired Pokemon CCG, and they went from something like zero to $1 billion in sales in like 18 months or something like that. It's like 98, 99, I think. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden they had all kinds of money for marketing research and the projects I was working on and those kinds of things. And so we did a whole bunch of projects sitting behind the 2 meter watching people trying to learn the rules to play Magic from the inserts, and also D&D and board games. And it was a really fascinating study in like how humans operate and what they get out of games. Watching, some people, they open the rule book. We had an intro D&D product we were looking at, and one group of like five or six people came in, guy opens the rule book and he says, oh my God, this rule book is 80 pages. What's going on here? And they hated it. Next group came in, almost the exact same words, except they're like, oh my God, this rule book is 80 pages. Look, there's spells and monsters in here. Wow, this is amazing. Like, that's our people. We need to build for people who enjoy what we have to bring and not try to build for everyone.
So, okay, so you're doing market research. Mm-hmm. Okay, how do you get from market research to R&D?
So I was just designing cards because I was fascinated by it, and eventually just designed a 300 card set or something like that, and just walked into the office of Bill Rose, was the head of R&D at the time, and said, hey,
and still is.
yeah. And I said, hey, I designed a set. Do you want to publish it? Here it is. And, he was sort of like, politely dismissive, like, come on, man. We got stuff to do here. And I was about to like turn and walk out of the room with my head down, but instead I turned around and I said, hey, tell me why. And I sort of like slapped it on his table and said, I really appreciate it. Give me some feedback. And so, lo and behold, a little while later, it came back to me with like all marked up with a red pen, like a teacher, with his feedback telling me that my commons were too complicated and my set didn't hold together. And this was like in 01 or 02 or something like that. Like the level of sophistication of the design wasn't as high back then as it is now, but it was like Bill and you and Mike Elliott were sort of like the elite of the design people who understood this knowledge. And here I was getting feedback at the highest level. And so it fueled me, and I went and designed another 300 cards and another 300 cards and kept slapping them down on his desk until finally they needed someone for a set. And they're like, okay, well, this guy's relentless. Put him on a set.
So what was the set?
It was Judgment.
Judgment, and, okay.
Yeah. And the team was Bill Rose, Richard Garfield, you.
Yeah, that was
and
the
me,
team.
And me. Like the three highest power in design talent plus me were sitting down for design meetings.
Yep.
And then shortly after that, all three of you got largely pulled onto other projects, and I was left to be the design lead. Although you stayed quite a bit and mentored me quite a bit, but suddenly I found myself as design lead on a Magic set with Bill, Richard, and Mark. And I apparently I was kind of fearless and just plowed through and was churning out ideas. And I kind of had this attitude that, like, you know, I may not have the most experience or knowledge, but no one will beat me in amount of creative output. And I just churned out ideas. And I think you did beat me in creative output, as you did everyone, but I did pretty well for myself anyway.
Okay, so you did Judgment. So what was the next thing you worked on?
Say again?
What was the next thing you worked on after Judgment?
I got put as lead designer again, and that was Scourge.
Yep.
And
what do you remember of Scourge?
It didn't get the Dragons theme. I mean the whole block was kind of like the first Tribal Theme Matters set. Scourge was trying to wrap up some of those loose ends and develop some of the cool things that had been started in the first two sets, and ended up with a Dragon Matters theme that was kind of shoehorned in late, but ultimately with some awesome new stuff in it. So
yeah, one of the interesting things is, like, you did the when you handed over the design, there wasn't the dragon theme wasn't really there, right?
Yeah, right. It had a couple of really great dragon cards in it, but it was more during the development and tuning phase when it really became the theme of the set.
Anything else you remember about Scourge?
I don't know. Do you have any memories of it?
I'm trying to think. I wasn't on Scourge. I remember it. It had a weird development because they added in the dragon theme. Let's move on. So okay, you did Scourge. So what was the next set you did?
I was on the Mirrodin team.
You know, the Mirrodin team.
Oh
okay.
Man, what an awesome set that was! I remember that one real well. That was you, me, and Tyler Bielman and Mike Elliott.
Okay, we'll talk about being on the Mirrodin. What is your memories of Mirrodin?
That was we knew we were going to do an artifact themed set, and we had decided to really go all in on it. And we knew a lot more than Antiquities was sort of the artifact set that had been done before, which was like so early that it was, you know, didn't really hold together. I remember very well our meetings about how to do equipment, and it was pretty controversial. We went back and forth on a few ones, and I remember you were advocating for a version of equipment early on where you could equip and move it around as an instance during combat, and I was advocating for equip as a sorcery, and we finally figured out that it would make combat too complicated to have multiple equipments out there that could be like bounced around, and you know, in order to make it play well, equip costs would have to be pretty high. And so you're a fierce arguer, but I remember silently congratulating myself for being on the winning side of that.
Yeah,
and eventually you get your way in Darksteel too, right?
Well, we ended up making some, they weren't Dark Steel. They were in the final set. Fifth Dawn had a cycle that you could, in instant speed, change them. But, and one of them was horribly broken, but I just like the idea of somebody tossing somebody's sword mid-combat. Maybe that was a bad idea.
No, I remember the discussion was when the equipment dies, it just drops on the ground and someone else can pick it up. And somebody was like, yeah, that's how it works.
Yeah, we went through a lot of different, I remember on equipment, we knew we wanted to do equipment. Like that, from day one, we wanted to do equipment, but we went through a lot of different versions of equipment.
Yeah, and there had been, like, early artifacts that are, you know, Sword of the Champions or whatever, where you could, you know, tap to give a mini giant growth to something or things like that. And none of them were quite right. They were themed as equipment, but it wasn't a mechanic, and they were all awkward.
Okay, so that's equipment. Do you remember anything else from Mirrodin? Affinity or... Entwine or Imprint? Oh, Imprint! You and I have a lot to do with Imprint. Do you remember this?
Yeah, that's right. Were we arguing over Imprint?
No, so here's the origin of Imprint. I had made a card, basically what ended up being Soul Foundry, for a set. And the rules manager like, what are you doing? This is crazy. And then you made a card in Scourge, I guess, that had this. It had the same shtick of... pick a card and then you care about the card. And when I saw you made that card, I'm like, I made a card. I'm like, wait a minute. Maybe we can make this a mechanic. And so we did it in Mirrodin, but it was based on you and I had individually made a card that were just completely separate cards, but both of them required you to set a card aside. And it just dawned on me that we could make that a thing. And I thought that was kind of neat for a customizable equipment, you know, customizable artifacts.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome. I had forgotten about that. And yeah, I remember. And I think we didn't have all that many Imprint cards in the set, so we kind of had to fight for it because it was a weird rules.
Yeah, we didn't have a lot.
You know, we had to get permission to do it, but it turned out I'm really glad we did.
Okay, so after Mirrodin, what was the set you did after Mirrodin?
So I was lead on Champions of Kamigawa, which was... supposed to be sort of like a theme or world and stories matters set. And it was the first time since Legends that we really wanted to pack a set with a lot of Legends. And it was fun to work on, but ended up being really weird. I thought Brady Dummermuth did a ton of research on world building and worked with me really well to put the Kami and all these strange themes together. And we had a Spirits Matters theme, which like you wouldn't normally go there for gameplay, but because it was like an IP, a story world theme set, that's where we went with it. And, you know, I was also on Saviors of Kamigawa too, and then Mike Elliott was on Betrayers in the
middle. Yeah, you made two sets in a block. Not a lot of people have done that.
Yeah, and it was kind of a strange place because I don't think anyone on the Magic R&D side was really comfortable with we're just going to go all in and build our mechanics around the themed story characters. And it went through a lot of revisions. It kind of, I think Soul Shift got added in late.
I'm trying to remember. A bunch of Champions of Kamigawa happened in development because I was on the development team. I wasn't on the design team. But Splice and the flip cards, those were both in development. Those weren't from design. One of the challenges, just so people, I don't know if people know this, it was Bill Rose's idea to do a top-down set. And we had a lot of arguments about what the top-down set should be. And we ended up choosing Japan. Do you remember the runner-up?
Was it Egypt?
Yeah, Egypt was runner up.
Yeah. In fact, that very first set that I slapped down on Bill Rose's set was Egypt themed.
Oh, was it? So what happened was
that one lost Egypt set.
The dictum that Bill put at the time was that he wanted to build the world first and do the mechanics second. So instead of, like, now when we do a top-down set that are very integrated, like, we work with the creative team to make sure that the choices that are making allow us to make interesting mechanical choices. But you got put in a weird thing where the world got built first, and then you had to make mechanics. And one of the challenges is mechanics just are not as flexible as creative. And I know that
it's a great lesson to take away. And for a while, I sort of felt like I had some regrets because it was not regarded as a very successful set. But on the other hand, it was so distinctive and had so much Pellian charm. And it's not the kind of thing that we would ever do again for a long time, or maybe really capture that kind of flavor ever.
So just so you're aware, on my blog, the number one request on my blog by far is people want to go back to Kamigawa. It is the number one request on my blog.
Awesome. So. Good job. You're my people out there. I love you.
So you did Champion Saviors. You really kind of, you veered left. I mean, we do that a lot in the third set. But you remember the theme of Saviors?
Yeah, it was Hand Size Matters.
Yes, Hand Size Matters, exactly.
Yeah, and I was really attracted by the novelty of it, and like, let's play in a different way to care about here. You know, here's a feature of the game, a number that you don't normally care about at all. Let's really explore the design space there and see what we can do with it. And then I think there was some fun to be had there, but it made you do a thing that you don't normally want to do, which is don't play your spells and your cards, all right? Just save them up. So it was kind of pulling in two directions. It was an experiment that I feel like didn't quite work out.
Yeah, one of the things I think of like your designs is you were very committed. You were going to do something, and you were very committed to that thing. As we see as we'll go along, but you definitely, that's the when I remember your designs, like, you were passionate, you wanted to do the thing you wanted to do, and you would do it, and you would fight tooth and nail for that thing.
Yeah, I probably overvalued novelty and doing something that's never been done before. You remember the Bartle scale with, Socializer Killer? Like, way, way out there on Explorer.
Yeah. So you love doing things we hadn't done before.
I get ideas that have never been done before, and I want to prove that it's possible.
Okay. Let's keep going.
The biggest one of my career is Draw Triggers, which ultimately happened.
We'll get there. We'll get there. Okay, so we're going in order. So okay, after Saviors Kamigawa, what's your next set?
That is going to be Time Spiral.
Time Spiral. Okay, let's talk Time Spiral.
They gave me another lead after that.
Yeah.
on a super cool.
I gave it to you. This is Time Spiral. Once we get into like wrapping stuff, now I'm head designer, so I'm the one that gave you Time Spiral.
Yeah. Thank you. It was awesome. And you were on the set.
Yeah.
And Forsyth contributed to it too.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was on there doing, fantastic work as he does.
Yeah,
I remember it was his. He was really pushing for having the time shifted cards in there.
Well, the time shifted sheet was my idea, but he was the person that we put in charge of it.
Mm-hmm. He built out the list.
Right. I mean, it was my idea to have the time shifted sheet, but once we knew we were going to do it, we assigned Aaron to be responsible for it. So Aaron was responsible for the time shifted sheet.
Yeah, and it was your. It was your framework to do past, present, future.
Yeah, yes, yeah.
Past, alternate, present.
Yeah, yep. That was my.
Okay. Yeah. So like, what a fun set to go through, like, and start to collect the best mechanics and keywords from Magic history. And again, that was at a point when we didn't repeat past keywords a lot, right? Like,
yeah, we had done a few, but not a lot.
Oh crap! We redid Storm, man. That's something I should have said from Scourge, right?
Oh yeah. Storm. Yeah, Storm's your baby.
Oh dude, I should call that out.
Talk about the making of Storm. How'd you make Storm?
The dubious honor of one of the most broken comics ever. Again, paying attention to some number that happens in the game that you don't normally pay attention to, and. You know, early on when we were, wow, now you've got a little mini quest here, which is how many spells can I play in one turn? And of course, when you haven't played with it a whole lot, you're thinking, oh, three or four, maybe, right?
Yeah.
And so we're kind of designing for that. And then in development, I didn't realize like what a big deal it would be to have it be on play trigger instead of on resolution trigger.
Yeah.
I should have gone back and like raised a red flag there, but my mind was on to the next thing, I think.
Yep.
Okay. But so, hey, that we've got development teams too.
Do you know I have a scale called the Storm scale that talks about how likely something is to come back to a standard legal set?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Where's companions?
Okay, so we're in Time Spiral. So any other things about Time Spiral before we move on?
The untapped your lands cards.
Yeah, the free spell stuff. Yeah.
How did that get through? Yeah,
I mean, Time Spiral was fun. I mean, if you knew the mechanics, Time Spiral was a blast. It just, if you didn't know the mechanics, it's like, hey, new player, here's 20 mechanics. It was a little overwhelming.
Yeah.
Okay, so after Time Spiral, what was the next set you did?
Let's see. I was on a number of other sets, kind of.
So, like, next is Lorwyn Block. Were you in Lorwyn Block? Yeah. You were in Shadowmoor.
I was Eventide a little bit. I think I did.
Yeah.
A bunch of.
Right, you were on even. Were you on Shadowmoor or just Eventide?
I think it was just Eventide.
Okay.
I did Retrace.
Yeah,
and quite a few cards for that.
Yeah, you made what's the white red guy you made? The upgrade guy.
Oh yeah.
That would inspire a whole mechanic down the road.
Yeah.
I'm blanking on his name, but the audience knows. Okay, so after Eventide, then what are we getting into? We're getting into
let me see.
Scars of Mirrodin. Did you? Not Scars of Mirrodin. Sorry, Shards of Alara. Did you work on any of the Shards of Alara blocks?
Yeah, Shards of Alara was broken into.
Oh, right, you were on the band team. You led the band.
I was leading the band team.
Yeah,
and
yeah, Extended your baby. I'm not Extended. Exalted's your baby.
Yeah, Exalted was the one I was pushing for. It was pretty clean, pretty simple.
I was skeptical. I didn't like it at first, but once I played it, I came around. But
yeah, that was a great example of something where once people played it, they were like, "All right, this plays well."
Yeah,
and it gained a lot of support.
Yep. Okay, so you're after that. Did you work anything else on the Shards of Alara block?
Yeah, I was on the Alara Reborn team.
You're on Alara Reborn team. Okay. Aaron led that, right? I'm pretty sure Aaron led that. I'm almost positive Aaron led that.
Yeah, you're right.
Okay, so after that, we get into Scars of Mirrodin. Did you do any of the Scars of Mirrodin block?
No, I don't think I was.
Okay.
I was on...
Magic
2010.
Magic 2010.
Yeah, M10. Yeah, that was kind of a watershed base set too.
Yeah, definitely.
We really re-envisioned what base sets were going to be, and kind of went back to Magic's roots and started reprinting standalone set keywords.
Yeah. No, that was a big set. Yeah. I was on that too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so after Magic 2010, then we get to Zendikar block. Did you work in the early part of the Denver Cowboys?
I did the first plane chase in between there too.
Oh yeah. Oh, you did the first plane chase.
Yeah, yeah. That was when we were starting to do these kind of side dish sets. I don't know what you want to call them, but they're more of a regular thing. And we were experimenting with different ones.
There's a lot of plane chase fans out there. We've made two plane chases so far. There's a lot of call for a third one, so maybe one day.
Yeah, and I was the one who came up with the roll of die idea and
the plane or die. That was yours?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's cool.
Mm-hmm. To have every card have both a trigger and an ongoing effect.
Well, that's cool. Okay, so in Zendikar, I know that you led the last set, but were you involved in Zendikar or Worldwake?
No, I wasn't on the design teams there, although I was playtesting and contributing cards here and there.
Let's talk Rise of the Eldrazi, because I know that's your baby.
Oh, my God. I love that set so much. It was fantastic.
So let's talk. What happened there? How'd that come to be?
So we started, we knew that we were going to have this theme of giant monsters that rise up and try to destroy the planet. And I believe it was Ken Nagle who was telling the stories about how he used to play StarCraft, and him and all his friends would just sit back and turtle up and then build battle cruisers and make all the battle cruisers smash together in the middle of the map. And so from that came the phrase battle cruiser magic. And we said, okay, this is going to be a new way to play Magic. Again, the novelty, right?
Yeah.
We're going to allow people to turtle up and put out some huge stuff and smash them together. And it had never really been reasonable, like in Draft or Sealed, to be putting out 8/8s and having them battle in the middle of the board. And when it happened in playtest, like the first time we had the set all put together and people were dropping 8/8 commons and then smashing them together, there was like, I was cheering. People on the design team were like, yes, battle cruisers are happening. And we made sure that there were multiple routes to make it happen, right? You had
there was level up, and there was
you had level up, and you had sort of like an aura theme to it, so you could get like the little Voltron guys that would build up to be able to take on an 8/8, and then you would just get Eldrazis that would drop on the board. And like normally, you're not playing 8/8 drops in most limited environments, but like you've got little spawn that you can sacrifice to get extra mana, and we had a whole bunch of extra mana boosting and really a lot of it was about the commons. We had a lot of 1/3s and 2/4s and things like that that would just stop the early combat from happening, but then those little guys crumble when the big boys come out. So it took a while to make it all work well, but I was so happy that it worked so well. And then the giant, the Titans just really caught people's imagination too. I was so happy with that.
Okay, so then actually I realized I got things out of order. Then was Scars of Mirrodin Block, but you weren't involved in that. But following that was Innistrad Block, which I know you were involved in. I don't think you did Innistrad or Dark Ascension, right? But you
right.
After the Destroyer was your baby.
Yeah, they were giving me third sets.
That was your specialty.
And Azen Restored was also super fun to work with. That was Soul Bond. And again, that was another mechanic where that people were sort of skeptical of, but then they played it and it caught on quite a bit within the business development team. But the big one was Miracles. And for years, I don't know, on other sets, I had been trying to get through some kind of something happens when you draw this card. And there were all kinds of rules problems with it. There were all kinds of objections to it.
Do you know Tempest tried it? Do you aware of that?
Yeah. You told me that.
Yeah. We tried in Tempest and like, it can't work. We gave up on it.
You told me, Brian, you're gonna have a tough battle here if you keep fighting this. But you
didn't give up.
Advice. and Miracles ended up being sort of on the edge, you know, and some of the objections that the development team had ended up being true. Like, you know, if you draw this and don't show it first and put it in your hand, there's going to be a dispute and it's going to be trouble.
Yep.
Should I talk about the power up mechanic, power up your deck mechanic?
Sure. That was
from. Didn't happen.
Yeah.
Didn't
okay.
Happen. I don't think it's actually ever going to get used.
Okay. So, but what was the power up mechanic?
So this is a mechanic that says you have cards that sit outside your game and that.
Oh yeah, we called it the forbidden mechanic.
Yeah, forbidden.
Yeah,
forbidden cards. You may not put this card in your deck. And then other cards would say that when you play this, shuffle a forbidden card of, you know, such and such characteristic, shuffle right. it into your deck. So as the game goes on, now you've got...
And they were crazy cards. The forbidden cards were crazy cards.
Yeah, right. The stuff that would never be printable.
Right. But you used to joke, it's double lightning bolt, R, do six. Yeah, these are crazy things that you never could actually make.
Yeah, and the thing that I loved about that was, like, once your deck gets powered up, like, oh, every draw is much more exciting. You're just like, come on, I want this. And Miracle sort of did that, too. So I was happy that Miracle ultimately played that role. But, of course, Forbidden... ended up being forbidden.
Like, yep.
And just in playtesting, we had terrible trouble with it because, of course, you forget that those cards in your deck and you don't take them out and you're going to get DQ'd. And it's a nightmare. It might work in like online magic or something like that.
Yeah, it might.
Automatically. But, man.
So
it was... That was a brick wall.
So Evans and Short, was that your last set?
Yeah, that was my last set.
That was your last set. So so like I said, I'm almost to work here. So we managed to get through your whole set. So
I had like a dozen other CCG sets on Duel Masters too. You know what I should point out? Duel Masters was kind of a testing ground for us to do crazy stuff. That was the first place where we did double-sided cards and melt cards.
Yeah.
Were considered way too crazy and then eventually did find their way into Magic sets.
Yeah. No. So, I mean, obviously I'm talking about Magic. You did a lot of other stuff too, Jess, but this is a Magic podcast. We talk Magic.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
so is there anything, I'm almost to my den. Is there anything else you want to say? Anything to wrap up your time on Magic when you think back to your Magic days?
Man. So I probably left in 2011 or something like that, and man, do I miss it! It was great. I was there for 10 years, and it was fun just about every single day. The best thing about it was working with a bunch of people who were so interested and excited and just energized to be there and be doing what they're doing every day and coming up with new ideas. You know, I talked about how I love novelty, and it was always new, always interesting. So. I look fondly on my time there. Privilege.
We miss you. It was I liked having you around. So
yeah, I got to be the boss of Ken Nagel and and a few other Magic designers.
Help them
succeed the way. You mentored me and you helped me succeed early on too.
So, well, Ken's now a veteran, so you might feel old.
I want to say I really appreciate the mentorship you gave me and a lot of the opportunities I got were because you advocated for me and helped me live up to my potential. So
I was glad to do it. You were a fun and passionate designer. So, but anyway, I'm approaching my den. It looks like. So we got to wrap this up. We all know what that means. It means this is the end of my drive to work. So instead of talking magic, it's time for me to be making magic. So thank you, Brian, for joining us.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks, all the fans out there. I love you.
Okay, and I'll see you guys all next time. Bye-bye.